The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Come to you from underneath a peach blossom. It's time for an episode of Be Awesome. Find positivity throughout your life and work. Just like our mascot rooster, Steve the Jerk.
All righty. Well, hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Be Awesome podcast. This is a good one. I actually just need to pull this up. And before we introduce our guest, I am in the studio by myself because Mark is at home today getting healthy. He got a little bit of a cold, so I told him to stay away. But before we get to the guest in the episode, Mark, I meant to ask you this. Did you try out the soap?
I did. I broke out the cucumber melon soap.
You went cucumber melon. All right.
Yeah. I was debating between the cucumber melon and the grapefruit, but I know my wife likes cucumber melon. So I haven't asked her if she's tried it yet, but it's in the shower.
Yeah. Mark and I on Monday, we went to a startup, all natural soap, shampoo, deodorant, essential oils, Kelly Marie's essentials. I did the bar of shampoo. I don't know if you got one of those, but I rubbed a bar of shampoo on my head and it was amazing. I didn't know what I was going to get. I thought I was going to have my hair fall out. Yeah, but
like it grew any more hair.
Yeah, I know it did. I did.
You beat me to it, Howard.
And on that note, we're going to introduce our guest today. I got to tell you, I saw our guest, Howard Bihar, on the Ed Milet podcast probably a year or two ago. And I sent a note and just said, I'm going to order your book. I can't wait to learn more about you. His book titled It's Not About the Coffee. And I put a little note that said, I would love to have you on my podcast sometime. And I always think that just saying that, everybody's going to be like, I want to be on the Be Awesome podcast. And a little time went by and I had a friend, Dr. Teresa Larson, past guest. And she said, you ought to have Howard Bihar on the podcast. He says, I've been trying to get him on the podcast. I sent him a note to saying I was buying his book and I'd love to have him on the podcast sometime. And she name dropped for me and she helped me and we got Mr. Bihar on the podcast. He is the past president of Starbucks, wrote a book titled It's Not About the Coffee, wrote a second book too. The second book is why am I drawing a blank, Howard?
The Magic Cup.
I knew it had magic and it's a magic cup. And I haven't read that one yet, but we're going to dig in to Howard as the person because I have done some scraping and I just found something interesting factoid about you yesterday that was really big for me. So first and foremost, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm embarrassed that I didn't get back to you. I have this rule that I live by for my life is that I always respond. I'm surprised I didn't.
You did respond. I just had an open question of if you ever want to be on, would love to have you on the podcast someday. It wasn't like, hey, you want to be on the podcast? It was just kind of like, casting a line lure at the end. So I've gotten better since then. Now I openly ask people and say, hey, you know, I'd like to have you on the podcast next month. How does that sound? So I'm a great salesman until I get nervous to talk to someone like you. So I got some work to do. But Mark, I'll let you open it up because Mark said he's got notes. So I'm interested already because he had his notebook out and he's got notes already. So let's kick it off, Mark.
Yeah, let's kick it off, Howard, because I've got a ton of questions. And like we told you last week or 2 weeks ago, we don't prepare usually for these interviews. We just kind of like to see how they flow. But I'm gonna kick it off right away because the book's all about putting people first. Like, spoiler alert, people come first. But I just start off with that. Is that something that your dad taught you or that you learned in the furniture business just naturally? Or where did that develop, that mentality of people come from?
My mom and my dad, that's who they were as people. My dad had a small mom and pop grocery store, you know, opened before the Depression. You know, in the days that he had a store, there were charge accounts. They weren't, people that came in weren't just customers. They were friends, they were neighbors, you know. They were within a 6-block radius or so, and that's who he served. So he knew everybody by name, everybody, you know, pretty much what they bought, and his deal was to serve them. And so that's where it came from. And my mother was, both of my parents were immigrants. You know, my mother came from a family of 13 children and, you know, always around people. So it was by nature for me. I was kind of the baby of the family and I was always around adults. And, you know, I don't know where it came from. I mean, that's the place that I always put it back to, because it was just kind of natural to me. Now, you know, over time, I get to become what I call a conscious competent about it.
Yeah.
You know, I understood what it meant and I could teach it, you know.
13 kids. Did your mom come from a cold climate country?
She came from Latvia.
Ah.
Jewish family from Latvia. And they all came. She came over in 1917 as a 9-year-old, you know.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, we were talking when we did the pre-call with you, and I was talking about when I learned about the grocery store and the charge accounts, and there is still one grocery store that I know of in Nenana, Alaska, that has that for all the residents. Each resident has a notebook with right. their name on it, and they fill out what they bought, and then at the end of the month or the first of the month, they go in and they pay up their bill, and that's how it's done. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So just jumping around, I'm going to jump around quite a bit today, Howard, but when you first decided to leave the furniture business, the family business, and you interviewed with Howard at Starbucks, was your family supportive? And what was that like, that process of separation?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had actually left the family business before that, before that. So I was already on my own. But my family thought I was crazy. They said, "You're going to go where?" And to sell what? And I mean, who's going to pay that much for a cup of coffee, right? That was when we charged $1.25. Now you can't buy anything for $1.25. But it was one of those things where, you know, it's luck is where opportunity meets preparation, where the opportunity came along. And over about a year's period of time, Howard and I had this dance. He didn't think I fit, and I didn't really want to go to work for somebody else. I was tired of working for companies. I was trying to find my own business. And anyway, but over about a year period of time, Howard and I got together, and, you know, it was lucky. You know, I'd like to tell you I'm brilliant. I'm not. You know, I'd had many failures before that, this one just turned out to be a winner. But I was always willing to pick up the cigarette butts and that, because I don't have a college degree. I barely got out of high school, you know.
Yep.
So I had to do things that other people wouldn't do, you know. And so when people thought I was crazy to go to Starbucks, this little tiny company, I was trying to just escape corporate life, you know. I was trying to find...
Yeah, that's you just hit the spot that I was going to assume that you were going to touch on that. And that was what I found yesterday, was that you don't have a college degree. I went on your LinkedIn page earlier this week. It wasn't yesterday. I was doing some of my research and I went on your LinkedIn page and I scrolled all the way down and I saw your community college and it said none. And it caused me to immediately do something, which was put on my LinkedIn page, Massasoit Community College, the 3 years that I was there and still considered a second semester freshman and double secret probation and probably the lowest GPA in history. And I put Massasoit Community College none for a degree as well. And I thought that was just amazing because I made the...
I'm not sure I understand.
Excuse me, 1 minute here.
That's all right. Go for it.
You see this thing? I bought this from Apple.
Yeah. Right.
It comes on every time I don't want it to come on. It just automatically comes on. So I just pull the thing out of the wall. I don't want it. Too much technology. Sorry. Yeah,
that's all right. No problem. But I really thought, you know, being the president of Starbucks, becoming the president of Starbucks and all of everything that you did, I really thought that, you know, I just made the assumption that you had probably at least one degree, if not three or four. And you're like me. I just did a keynote in Ohio this week, and one of my first slides says I successfully completed high school in 5 years. So I took 5 years to graduate high school.
I was a terrible student. I was a good learner, but a terrible student.
Yeah.
And I got bored easy, and I only wanted to study the things that I liked. You know, that doesn't work.
Right. Not in school, but it worked in Starbucks.
Yeah, well, no, Starbucks, I had to do the things I didn't like. You know, you had to do it all. You didn't get a choice, you know. But by that time, I was old enough to realize that's the way life is. You know, you got to clean toilets. You got to do all the stuff.
Yeah. Do you think, because that's an interesting segue to the next question I have, is basically like the college tuition is so expensive. Yeah. And it seems like people sort of look down upon that non-traditional route these days. How do you feel about successful people or people having the opportunity to succeed without the college degree?
I think you can do it. I mean, you see it in technology because these kids, by the time they're 16, they can code, they can do everything. So you're seeing more of that return. You know, it's kind of like the old days, you know, most of the retailers that they were all immigrants coming in, they didn't have college degrees. Most of them didn't even have high school degrees. Yeah. So they came and they figured out a pathway to make it work. I don't recommend it. I think I missed a lot. And what I missed was the opportunity to learn about things that I wouldn't normally learn about, history and things. And I kind of, I became a good learner about those things, but I wouldn't recommend it. My kids both have master's degrees. My wife has a PhD, you know, I'm the dummy in the family, you know, but I, you know, retail was a pathway. Yeah. And I think technology is a pathway for kids that don't want to go to college. I mean, spending my grandkids, I have two of them and three of them in college right now. You know what the cost is? It's $70,000 a year.
Yeah.
To go through, you know, these two private colleges. I mean, it's incredible. And the public one is $60,000 a year. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's too much. You don't need to go to, Harvard or Yale or whatever, unless you're going to become not even to be a lawyer. You have a lot of good law schools around that don't have those things. So, and it's unfortunate that we think somehow they're smarter and better than other kids. They're not. I learned that the hard way. I one of the biggest fears I always had was when we, you know, I'd work for companies and they'd always hire a Harvard or Stanford MBA and they'd come in the company. And I always thought, man, they're going to find me out.
Yep.
You find out that I'm not up to the task, but these people are smarter than I am. Everything. You know what I found out after a while? They're not.
Yeah.
They're not. They, you know, it had nothing to do with that. You know, what I had was a world worth of experience that none of them had.
Yeah. Well, and reality is business is about people.
Yeah,
I was fortunate enough. I did a keynote for 1,100 people in Columbus, Ohio, business managers for school districts in the great state of Ohio at the Columbus Convention Center. Across the street from the Columbus Convention Center is the Hampton Inn, and there is an employee there, Clifford Stewart, who is the doorman or the bellman, whatever you want to call him. But he calls himself, he's self-appointed, and other people call him the director of first impressions.
Yeah.
And Clifford is an amazing human. He's going to be celebrating his 60th birthday. He's had 20 years at the hotel. He's in episode 25 early on with Be Awesome. And he was able to be in the audience with me this week. And we were able to acknowledge his accomplishments. And when we were done, I said, Clifford, you said something really powerful to me. Now, he's been on the New York Times for customer service. He's the doorman, but he's been acknowledged for incredible customer service. And he looked at me when we did the podcast and he said, Josh, a building doesn't make a hotel. The people make the hotel. And he's 100% right. And that's in every business. And so a lot of times people that are, and I'd love to get my degree at some point. My fiance went back and she got her degree and got it in her 30s. I won't say how old she was, but she was in her 30s and she got her bachelor's. And she felt that that was important for a couple of reasons. One, she wanted to complete something she started. And two, she wanted our kids to, she didn't want for our kids to be in a house where do as I say, not as I do. And she wanted to do it and say that she did it so that the kids knew that, that they could do it. But we're very strong in encouraging our kids to continue their education. But hope that they do. But if they don't, you know, they need to figure out how to work and do all the things that, that are meaningful for folks.
Yeah, I mean, if you went and took a bunch of classes, you took a class on personal finance, you took a class on business finance, you took a class on how speaking, you took a class on how to write a one-page report. You know, things like that are going to serve you better than a lot of other classes you might take. You know, so my wife was the same way. She didn't have a degree when we got married, and she went to school and my kids, you know, took her example. They saw how hard she studied, and so they both did.
Yeah, no, that's my insecurity with my degrees has guided me to startups or small companies, and
exactly the same. Yeah. Startups, small companies, yeah. Right? Picking up the cigarette butts.
Yeah, well, exactly, and then. You know, it's interesting. I think I shared with you, the last startup I had gave 17 years to, and I was one of the first employees. And then all these people that were smarter than me and private equity came in, and they sold for $1.9 billion. And when I got towards the end before they sold and I was departed from the company, I looked around and I was like, man, all these people, you know, they got master's degrees and they're going for their doctrines and going for all these things. These people must all know what they're doing. And I sat there and I thought about it. I was like, well, where were they for the first 100 million? Because yeah. I was here from yeah. 0 to 100 million in revenue. And I'm going, where were these guys? Now, here's where they're smart. They didn't have to pick up the cigarette butts and they got the profit a little bit out of it. So maybe yeah, they were the smart ones.
You missed something by not picking up cigarette butts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always believe that, you know, we're here to serve. And one way you serve is picking up the cigarette butts. And if you do that well enough, then people are going to want to be with you and work with you.
Yeah.
You and I have exactly 17. I mean, I started with Starbucks. We had 28 stores.
Yeah.
You know? And when I retired, there were 15,000. Now there's 37,000.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I wish I would have kept all my stock.
Oh yeah. Well, that's, yeah, I wasn't going to go down that road. So, but yeah, this past Monday was marked 20 years that I got back in the industry and I gave 17 years to one company. And I just wisely got into another startup in the similar field. And we're having just so much fun. It's just, that's what it's all about. And picking up the cigarette butts, but in that case, in that piece too, this just reminded me and it clicked with me. You are a huge advocate of the good to great model and Collins and his work. And what really triggered something for me in your book was the BHAG.
Yeah.
Because I feel like everyone, our company included, when we were reading Good to Great, that was something that was like the Bible in the early 2000s, right? Every company was reading that book and they were trying to read from it, and they took the pages and interpreted them the way that they wanted. And the BHAG was almost always, with every company I talked to in our own company, revolved around money.
Yes.
They all revolved around money. And what was really cool was your BHAG at Starbucks didn't revolve around money.
Yeah, our BHAG was, we want to be one of the most well-known and respected organizations in the world, known for nurturing and inspiring the human spirit. Not a word about how much money we're going to make, how many stores we were going to have, none of that. It all revolved around people. When we set that out and we said one of the most well-known and respected organizations in the world, we all laughed. Now, at that time, we had about 200 stores. You know, we never thought. Somebody said someday we'll be as well-known as Coca-Cola. Nobody ever thought that would ever happen. Yeah. And here we are today. But the BHAG drove us. It was always the magnet that drew us back to our core when we got off track. And yeah. I took that and I plagiarized it for myself, because my mission statement in life goes like this. Every day I want to nurture and inspire the human spirit, beginning with myself first and then for others. And the reason why I say self first is what I've learned after living for almost 80 years. If you're not okay with you, it's very difficult to help somebody else. And yep. So that drives me. I think about it every day. I've got it right here. I've got my mission statement, my guiding, my values, and my how I do everything, my six P's right in front of me. I look at it every single day. I know it all by heart. But what I found is I want to look at it because it forces me to deal with it.
Yeah, that uncovered the you've got your principles online for anybody to see. And I never really thought of that until listening to you on podcasts and reading your book about the importance of having personal mission, vision, and values. And it almost ties into, you know, why a lot of people don't buy into their company's mission, vision, and values, because they don't have any for themselves. And if you don't have any for yourself, how are you going to buy into somebody else's? Right. And if you have a mission, vision, and values, that's clear and present. And I'm going to work on mine. Mine I have every day, right? But they're in my head. They're how I feel. They're who I am. But I don't have it in writing. But if you have it's that in writing. Wish,
if you don't write it down, it's just wishes, hopes, and dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
So you see this? I'm going to show you this little document, right? This in here. This is my five-year plan. Yep. I've had a five-year plan from the time I was 27 years old.
And
I still do them now. And I do them with my wife. We have our we have a five-year plan that's for all of us. And then we each have our own five-year plan. And we have all these different headings, spirituality, material, economic well-being, personal growth, and well-being, health, kids, our marriage. And we have 3 to 5 goals under each of those.
Wow.
And look, I'm almost 80 years old. I'm still doing a five-year plan. That's getting pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
I said, I'd rather not complete the plan than have no plan. You know, if you don't know where you're going, then any path will get you there.
Yeah.
Live your life with intention. With intention, right? You don't want to look back at your life at my age and say, what the hell happened?
Right.
You want to look back and say, hey, I set out to do certain things. Did I get them all done? No, but I did most of them. And I nurture and inspire the human spirit, which is drives me every day. Yep. And so you're giving me the opportunity to do that.
Well, yeah, Josh, I'm gonna cut you off because Howard, what you said just resonates so much with me. And Josh has everything in his head. He's kind of a meatball. He's got everything up in his head, but he doesn't necessarily write them down. And one of the things I just wanted to follow up on what you just said was what about work-life balance? That's something Josh and I talk about all the time. And I don't think Josh has a great work-life balance. So I'm getting him to work on that. And I think you worked your butt off your whole life. You picked up the cigarette butts and you're chairman of the board or, you know, president of the company. Tell me about your work-life balance.
I don't subscribe to work-life balance.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I got the tissues out.
No. We're going to have Howard on every single week.
The term I would use is work-life integration.
Okay. Right. Okay, Josh, that's the same thing.
So that you integrate your whole life. These things aren't separate from each other. You know, I mean, that's like saying that, you're separate from that your home, your children, and your family, and the other parts of your life don't fit together. They have to fit together. And so sometimes there's more with the family, if you want to talk about time spent. More with the family. Sometimes there's more with the work. And it moves around. Look, an ice skater gets on I don't care how good an ice skater you are, you're always out of balance. And that may be the tiniest thing. And maybe your brain is all the only thing that's really correcting it, right? But you're always out of balance, right? It's never perfect. But if you integrate the two, and, you know, my kids, I used to take my kids on business trips. You know why? Because I wanted them to, when I was gone, I wanted them to understand what I was doing. It wasn't just that I was gone.
Yeah.
Right. But here's what I did. And so when I come back from the trips, we would have conversations about what I did. I'd include them in meetings and they learned and, you know, and they got interested. And so I think you put it all together and it all is one big circle. Just round and round we go. Where should
stop? I can get that behind that, Josh. That makes perfect sense to me. But
the people what I'm want saying, to be Howard, perfect balance. You know, it's they want to be in perfect sync balance all the time. I spend this much time with my family, this much time. It doesn't work like that.
No, I agree with you. But when the pie chart is 90% work and 10% family, that's not balance. That's not integration either.
No, you got to have time for yourself.
I was home for five weeks. Tired,
you need rest. Yeah. Right? You can't go without sleep. So you got to get sleep. You can't go without I want to live a fulfilling life. Okay. Here's my, this goes with the work-life balance. I want all parts of my life. Many people say, oh, I want a happy life. Happiness is a part of life. It's part of fulfillment, but we're not always happy, right? We also, if we want a fulfilling life, we're going to have disappointment. We're going to have some pain, some sorrow, some joy, some excitement, some happiness, some success, some failure, right? All those things to go to make us a whole person so that we can understand ourselves and we can understand others.
I agree 1,000%. My only pushback would be what you said five minutes ago. If you're not okay, you can't help anybody else.
You gotta be okay. Yeah.
So if you're not okay because you've got three companies and you're just out of your mind all the time, you can't be a help to anyone else.
It doesn't work like that. Even the greatest artists, the greatest athletes, they find other things.
Yes.
Right? Because it's all of it going together that makes it work.
Yeah. I'm working on getting a hobby, Howard. What do you got for hobbies?
God. Oh, man. You and I, we are brothers. I never had a hobby. I never had a hobby. My hobby, servant leadership.
Yeah.
It's my hobby.
Yeah.
And, it's the darndest thing, but I know I have my son. I have so much love and respect for my son. He plays golf. He plays tennis. He spends so much time with his kids. I mean, I got to admit, I was not around a lot.
Yeah.
I was traveling all the time. And my wife was happy about that because she was going to school. Yep. But I learned to create time when really quality time when it needed to be there. I don't hobbies.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay.
Howard, help me with my hobby. I don't need to have one. Howard, I want a chainsaw in a charity thing last month. I live in the woods. And so I thought my hobby was going to be cutting up wood. I did that for like 2 days and I was like, this isn't fun. I said, this isn't going to be my hobby, is getting into cutting wood. This is work. If I'm going to do work, I might as well do work that makes money and makes a difference and does other things. And so I was back to the drawing board. The chainsaw is now in the garage, but I like the chainsaw. That's good.
All right. You guys are obviously, brothers from another mother. I'm just going to say it right now.
Yeah.
But I want to say this, Howard. Oh my gosh. I'm going to lose my train of thought.
I got him.
No, I know. You just got me. Hold on a sec.
Oh, you thought Howard was going to come in and do the balance and all the stuff that you want me
No. Josh likes the softball questions. I'm a little bit of a hardo. So I'm going to ask this. You talk about compassionate emptiness.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, this is just a total guess, that you were a difficult man to work for. You were fair. But you had expectations.
And I had expectations, and I had performance counted.
So tell me what exactly is compassionate emptiness in a way that sounds, what exactly is that?
What does it mean? All right, if you're a man, you've all experienced this, right? Your wife comes home and she tells you about her day, and you immediately go into problem solving mode. Well, why didn't you do this? Or your kids come home, they tell you about their day, and you say, well, you should have done this. Yeah. Right, we go into problem solving mode, but that's not what they want, is it?
Nope,
they want you to listen to them. They don't want you to give them solutions. They just want you to listen to them and acknowledge their pain or their joy or whatever it is that they're bringing home. They don't want you to give them any solutions. Just shut up and listen, and nod your head, and say, "That's interesting. Thank you for sharing that with me." Well, I was just like every other guy until one, and my wife would complain all the time. I don't want your solutions. And my kids would do the same thing. Finally, I'm reading this book. And in the book, there's this two-word quote, compassionate emptiness. And what it means is that you're compassionate, you're listening, you're caring, you're showing that you care about what they're talking about, but empty of solutions, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're in tune, you're listening, but you're not trying to solve their problem for them. You're just there for them because that's what they want. And if they ask you a question like, what you've done, then you answer. But otherwise, you shut up. You know? And so that's where that came from. So I was not a hard ass. I was not. I was direct.
Yep.
Right? But always with love in my heart and caring. And everybody knew that I cared about them personally. And because I think that the there's three core things to servant leadership. The first one is that you help your people grow as human beings.
Yep.
That's the most important thing in any organization. It's the most important thing in a family. You help your kids grow as human beings. What does it mean to be a good human being? Then number two is you help your people grow as professionals, to become better at what they do. That's why we encourage our kids to go to school, to study, all this, and why we do it the same thing at work. So you help them become better at what they do or what they want to do. And then the third thing is you help them achieve their own goals in life. You don't tell them what their goals are. You ask, what are you trying to accomplish? How can I help you?
Yep.
And that's the core of servant leadership. And that's what we're talking about here. And it's about serving people. And so I always thought that my job was to serve my people, not be served by my people. Did I hold them accountable? You bet I did, but in a caring way. And I was not a blamer. You know, if something went wrong, it was me. Where did I fail? And first, that's the first place I went. You know, I made mistakes. I'm an emotional guy, and I might respond too quickly to something that just wasn't a fact. And then I had to own it and apologize for it and own it. But I always thought that, you know, it wasn't their fault. It was somehow my fault if something went wrong. And I just didn't do a good enough job with them. But I did. Yeah, you're right. Performance counted for me. I mean, it was important to me. That my fifth guiding principle, or how my fifth P, is performance. That in life, performance matters. Whether it's if you're a monogamous relationship, then if you're married and you're a monogamous relationship, then you got to be monogamous, right? If you commit to your team to get something done, then your job is to get it done. If you commit to your kid to be at the softball game or a soccer game, then your job is to show up. And so I think performance counts in life, in all facets of life, whether it's work or it's home. And that's why I call it work-life integration.
Yeah, no, that just knocked it right out of the park with me. And you know, what you were talking about is, you know, looking at yourself, that's the mirror in the window, right? When something goes wrong for your team, you look in the mirror. When it goes well, you look out the window to your team. And so that's something a lot of people have a hard time doing. And self-reflection is it's becoming one of the easier things for me to do, the daily self-reflection of, you know, what happened yesterday, what went wrong. I've had two very difficult conversations this week, which is like, I typically have, you know, one every couple of weeks. But I've had two really difficult conversations. And one of them was, I wrote an email out of an emotion, even though I took 24 hours, I wrote an email out of emotion. And there was a part of it that I didn't see anything wrong with it. And the person that received it did. And I had to own it. And I had to say, hey, it's not what I meant. Those were my words that I typed. I own it. I am sorry. I'm going to fix it. But the other piece that hit for me is I did a talk yesterday and a breakout for leaders on leading a multi-generational workforce, because right now there's five, and if you're in Pinellas County, Florida, six generations in your workforce. And the reason why I say Pinellas County is I've got a friend named Clyde, who's a heavy equipment operator in Pinellas County. He's 92. So, and he says he's going to live until 105. So if you're drinking the same water he's drinking, you got a couple more 5-year plans on your plate. So, you know, I ask, one of the questions I ask when I do this talk on the leading the multi-generational workforce is, how many of you career path with your team? And you should spend a minimum of 15 minutes a year. And I say a quarter, because life is moving so fast, where you sit down and you say, okay, Where do you want to be? Where do you see yourself? What is that? And listen, if you want to be, you know, if you want to just do what you're doing and go down that path for the next 30 years and be the best, whatever that is, great. But if there's something else that you want to be and do, there's never been a time better than today where you can be anything you want to be. and I want to help you. And I'll tell you, I had 80 people in the class, 3 raised their hand that they actually career path. And that's tough. They owned it. I was happy that they did, but you know, that's a tough thing. We get caught up in our own lives that we don't think about how can we help others sometimes. And that's right. Tough.
And that's the key. That's the core of servant leadership. And that's, we're here to help others be all they can be and whatever, wherever they want to be and whatever they want to be doing. Yeah. And so I'm not a big believer in this multi-generation issue. Look, tell me a person that doesn't want to be treated with respect and dignity at any age. Tell me a person that doesn't want to be cared about. Tell me a person that doesn't want to be loved. You know, and those things are, they're from a 2-year-old all the way up to a 100-year-old. Yeah. And it's different forms, and you have to understand, you know, where they are. But the only way you really understand is by asking them, because I don't assume that all 20-year-olds are alike. They're not. No. We all have different sets of experiences. And I don't assume that all 80-year-olds are alike. I know some 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds that are just like you're talking about. They're still going. They're still, I mean, they're running, they're doing stuff. Right? And I know some 50-year-olds that gave up a long time ago.
Yeah. No, there's studies out there that we had 4 generations. We didn't have the silent generation, either that or they weren't talking. But that we had 4 generations in the class. And that was one of the things that we were talking about, is that for over 100 years, every new generation is the worst generation.
Right.
At some point, every generation is the worst generation. The only generation that's different is Gen X, which Mark and I are both Gen Xers, and we hate everybody. We just hate all generations according to the studies, Mark. I'm not saying that we hate everybody. We love everybody. Our companies be awesome, but there's studies that show that at some point in time, every new generation is the most hated and worst, laziest generation, and not willing to work or whatever the stereotypes are. And the big thing is, you know, breaking the stereotypes, right? And the other piece is, you know, we talk about, you know, diversity, inclusion, and equity in forms of, you know, people's race or color or background or what have you. But we don't do that generationally. There's a lot of industries that you go in and you see everybody's around the same age. Everyone's about the same, you know, whatever. And we've got to pull it together, because, you know, it's a kind of a story about potholes. You know, I've got a gravel long driveway. And this is something my son would say. You know, when I was growing up, my dad would say, "Hey, get the pickaxe. We're going to go fill the potholes." Because in order to fill a pothole in a gravel driveway, you got to break around a foot around the pothole and then fill it in. Otherwise, you get a pothole again. And so, you know, for me, I just followed my dad. That's what we did. And that's how we did it. Now, my 17-year-old son, he goes out there, he would hit that thing twice with a pickaxe. And he's got to say, there's got to be an easier way. Right? There's got to be an easier way. And he'd go find it. And it'd probably be his brother. Right? He'd go get his younger brother, and he'd do a Tom Sawyer with him. But there, you know, the younger generation today has something that many previous generations didn't have, which is access to everything. Right. And that's scary for someone that had access to a typewriter, you know, when they were professional. So I think that's the scary part with regards to generations today, is these young generations, they're just consuming so much more than we could ever imagine as a Gen X or baby boomer, greatest generation. Silent generation.
Here's where I'm going to get old on you. Yep. I'm not sure that social media has been good for us.
No,
I agree.
And it's a reason, I have a different reason than most people have. I think the problem with it is there's zero accountability.
Yep.
In our growing up, right, if you said something in class, right, to a teacher that wasn't nice, right, you'd be out in the hallway.
Yep.
Right? Or whatever it was. And today you can post something on the internet about your teacher that something you shouldn't do, and there's no consequence. And if you wanted to comment about politics and you sent a letter to the newspaper, right, which we used to do, remember those days? Some people still do it, but a letter to the editor, right? You had to put your name, right, and address. And now people get on the internet, they have these handles, what I don't even know what they call, and they're able to say things that you would never say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you would be conscious of it. So either it's a potential effect on you or something. And now there is no accountability and no responsibility. And that is dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
It's dangerous. It's what's causing a lot of the problems. It isn't the fact that we have this tool where we can communicate with each other easily. It's the fact that there's almost no accountability to the tool.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. And what I'm loving that I see is that, so I have a 17-year-old and a 6-year-old, and my 17-year-old for his birthday wanted a record player. And so I'm seeing a lot of the younger professionals and teenagers that they're wanting what we had, which was a simpler life. They didn't want the complexity of everything that goes with that tool that's in your hand and the technology. And I'm with you on social media. Social media, for me, LinkedIn has been phenomenal. It's where I've made a lot of great network connections. I actually, if you do listen to some of these episodes, you can listen to an episode with David Cooks I did in a Starbucks. So the sound is terrible. But I did this podcast with a gentleman by the name of David Cooks, who is the author of Paralysis to Purpose, in the first week in November in 2018. And fast forward to 2022, I meet a guy named Mark Resnick on Jesse Itzler's Build Your Life Resume program, where we pay, you know, $1,500, and there's a social media aspect. It's got its own tool. And I read a post that this guy, Mark Resnick, that I never met, never heard of, that lives three towns away from me, wrote a book about his father and Alzheimer's on his 50th birthday, releasing it, and bought a couple copies. And lo and behold, 3 months later, I listened to David Cook's podcast. He says, I want to welcome Mark Resnick. I call David Cooks and I say, how do you know Mark Resnick? And he says, how do you know Mark Resnick? I said, I don't. I want to get to know him. He's a merchandise master and he's an author. And I think there's a way we could work together. And he says, he's my brother-in-law. So there are, and I met David Cooks on LinkedIn. I met him on LinkedIn from a post that he talked about his book release and bought his book. And that's how this happened. So there is good to social media, but there is definitely a component that's poor. I met you through LinkedIn. It was a clip that Ed Milette put up that caused me to listen to the entire episode and go, this is a cool cat. I got to get him on the podcast someday. And if nothing else, I got to read his books. And so, we have to figure out how to leverage the tools right. That's exactly.
LinkedIn is such a different animal than the rest of them, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part. But it's not that they're all good. How can you not think that those tools they're good? They allow us to communicate, you know, quickly and stuff like that. It's just that people can say things that are beyond. They can say anything they want to say, and it could be a total fabrication.
Yeah.
And it could be mean. It could be all those things that you would never do.
Right. Yep.
You know, that's the issue.
You said earlier, and a lot of people like yourself who are very successful say this, that it was luck. It was right place, right time, preparation meeting opportunity, whatever you want to call it. But I don't think it's just, I don't think it's an accurate term, because you're the type of person who had all these, you mastered the low-level skills, the kindness, being humble. Picking up the cigarette butts. And I think that's one of the things that some of the younger generations are missing. They're thinking too far ahead and they're not focusing on the low level principles of just being nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Being kind.
Kind, caring. Actually, caring.
I agree with that. Look at the national dialogue. Hey, I don't know what you guys' politics are. If you live in Florida, maybe you're, you know, right wingers. I don't know. But it's okay. I don't mind.
We're on the coast like you.
Yeah. Okay. So, but look at the dialogue that Trump has, right? And I don't mean to offend anybody. That is not, that kind of, those words are not okay. It's not okay. Right. I don't care whether you're a Republican, conservative, Republican, liberal, when I hear anybody being mean to another human being online or whatever they say, those things are not okay. Unless you want to destroy a country, then you're going to get what you want. Because when people start talking to each other that way, they start to lose their empathy mm-hmm. for others. This, you know, the guy that's the head of Microsoft now, right? Now, remember, you got Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates, both gone.
Yep.
They were not empathetic people. They would yell and scream at their employees. If they brought in an idea they thought was dumb, they'd tell them, get out of my office. You're dumb. Honest to God, that's how they would treat people. Abuse them. The guy who had been there a long time, and I can't remember, is it Nardell? No, whatever it is. Anyway, East Indian guy, and a great guy. He comes in. He'd been there a long time. Microsoft had been dead for 15 years. Nothing going on. He comes in, and he takes over from those two, and he turns the company around. Why? Now it's a place people want to go to work again. Why? Because he says the single most important skill any leader needs to have is empathy. And when you swear at other people, when you tell them how, you know, when you do bad things to other people, you don't have empathy.
Right. Right. And I'm so glad. Josh, I mean, we have great guests every single week, but
yeah.
Howard, you nailed it on the head. It's just not okay to act like that.
It's not.
If you're a teacher or coach, a father, a sibling, president of the United States, it's just not okay. And yeah. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, and that's what that can destroy us quickly, more quickly than anything else, because now people are starting to model it. Young people are saying that type of leadership, that's okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
Mm-hmm. Let's Josh, how are we doing on time? Since I don't have the recorder in front of me,
we got some.
Okay, let's do some. Let's switch gears just a little bit, Howard. What is your favorite food? What's your favorite meal? I want to know.
Favorite meal. I'm an eater. I love everything. But if you ask me what I like are pizza. I love great pizza. You know,
is there a good pizza in Palm Beach?
In Palm Springs. I'm in Palm Springs.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, we have good pizza in Palm Springs. We have the best pizza though. We have great pizza in Seattle. And I've never had a bad pizza. Some are just better than others. You know. Yeah. Yeah, it's like ice cream. There's no such thing as bad ice cream. Just some is just better than others.
I agree. Well said. Well said. Obviously, not obvious. You drink Starbucks. You like it? Were you always a coffee guy?
Absolutely. I've been drinking Starbucks. I drank Starbucks coffee for 15 years before I went to work there. They weren't selling coffee by the cup. I'd buy it by the pound and brew it at home. But
hypothetically,
I'm a Starbucks guy.
Hypothetically, this is just total hypothetical. Yeah. Starbucks goes away right now. What's your back off coffee?
Probably Pete's.
Pete's, oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
I love Pete's. We were one company at one time, but our roasting styles are the same. They came from a guy named Alfred Pete, and I like Pete's a lot.
So when you left Starbucks, did you get a lifetime free coffee card?
No, I did not. I got a lifetime free pound of coffee a week. But if I go into the stores, I get what's called the partner discount, which is 30% off, but no free.
I'll tell you this. I don't know if I told you the story. And Mark's right. You know, I do put a lot into my work. And I'm also a Tasmanian devil when it comes to when I get in the zone of work. I'm on the phone, I'm yelling, I'm doing all sorts of stuff. I'm not yelling like angry, I just speak loud. And so I was only home like 8 days, January and February. And so March 1st hit, and my fiance Amy says, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, she says, you gotta go. You can't be here. You're home for 5 weeks. This is not gonna work. So I said, all right, just give me 24 hours. Let me figure something out where I can go during the day. And I drove the mile and a half to the Target. That we have a Target with a Starbucks inside of it. And then outside of the Target, we have a Starbucks with a drive-thru. So there's two Targets on the same pad because it's so popular over here. So I go into the Starbucks, I get my coffee, my $3.56 for my Venti Pikes Black with, and I'm now doing oat milk. So it's a little bit more, I think it's $4.44. And I sit down and I'm I'm looking up temporary office space, and then all of a sudden Sean comes over and he says, hey, do you want to try a lavender smoothie? We got trials, samples. I say, oh yeah, take a sample. I'm looking at these offices, so much money. Comes over, hey, do you want to sample the coffee cake? Yeah, absolutely. I want to sample the coffee cake. Howard, five weeks later, my rent has cost me one coffee a day because you get free refills. And I spend anywhere between 6 and 10 hours in the Starbucks in the Target store in Eastern Massachusetts. And they finally, both Starbucks and Target managers on the same day came over to me at different times. And they said, are you from corporate? Because I'd be there for so long. but it's great. And it's, like I say, it's at the most I'm spending $5 a day, and I've got high speed internet. I've got a table and chairs. I've got a table with three chairs. I got an open door policy at my office. So if you want to come over to the Starbucks Target, Howard, anytime you come in, I got an open door policy. You sit down and we can get some stuff done.
Right, the day I retired, I said to my wife, honey, you want to go out to lunch? So she said, sure. So we get in her car. I open the driver's side and get in. She says, what are you doing? Right. Then I get in the car and I look down at the little thing in the middle between the two seats.
Yep.
There's the key to the safe deposit box. And I said, do you leave this key in your car all the time? She just looked at me and said, do you need to go back to work?
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of that, what are you doing when you're, actively giving keynotes and talks, or is what, like, sure.
Yeah, I don't do keynotes. I don't like keynotes. I think I'm not a believer in them. I think much better to have an interview style, much better, because I like including the audience, and I like to be relevant to what's going on at that time with the audience, because they listen. You know, if you ever, you know, both of you have given keynotes, you give a keynote up there and you look towards the back of the room and half the people are asleep.
Yeah.
Right. Or they're working on their iPhones, you know, or whatever they're doing. When it's an exchange, it gets exciting because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know the question that's going to be asked. And I always encourage the really difficult questions. The harder, the better I like it. The more what they think they're going to embarrass me, the more I like it. Because I'll answer any question, anything. Yeah. Nothing is off limits.
Yeah, no.
Personal life, I don't care.
That's
what I like. I enjoy that. So I'll do a keynote if somebody really insists, but otherwise I don't.
Yeah, so I'm doing keynotes because I'm just getting the name recognition and the branding and everything out there, and that's what people want. But that's my goal is to have, you know, a couch and some comfortable chairs on stage and having like an interview style. And I have a thing, if there's time, it's Ask Peach Anything. There's three things I don't talk about, which you touched on. Pizza is one of them, politics and religion, because in those settings. Talking about those three things, it can get ugly because people are too passionate about it. Like you say, hold no accountability, and I keep that off. I say that's off limits, and every single time, other than when I talk to kids, do a talk for kids, it's those three things that come up. They'll undoubtedly someone in the audience will say, "So what's wrong with pizza?" So nothing's wrong with pizza. You're probably a big Chicago fan. I'm from Boston. I love the style of pizza that we have. And they're like, oh, you're damn right. I like Chicago style pizza. Deep dish is the best. And I go, there you go. We're going to get in a fight over pizza. And I'd rather not get in a fight over pizza.
Yeah, right. Pizza. Yeah. I mean, I don't go into the politics. I mean, the most I do is do what I just did here. It's not Trump or Biden. It's none of that. It's language.
Yeah.
That's all I want people to recognize is that some language isn't okay. And it's not okay at home. Yeah. I guarantee that Donald Trump isn't going home and saying the same things he says when he's out in public to his wife or his kid. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
Because she punches lights out.
Yeah.
It's like my wife would punch my lights out.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and you know, the world has gotten to be a very kind of scary place, right? And there's just so much turmoil everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I woke up at 3:30 this morning, and I was at an Airbnb in Columbus, and we only had like the uh, the free basic Amazon channels, like the whatever it is, and it automatically defaults and it went onto the news. And here it is, Israel's, you know, bombing Iran, and Iran was bombing Israel last week, and we have the Ukraine war. We have, you know, all of these things happening. We have, you know, immigrants coming in from all over the place and flooding the streets and flooding the hotels. We've got mental health at the worst it's ever been. We've got, you know, teen suicide, the worst it's ever been. We see all these things and hear all these things, and we've got enough. We don't need to start talking poorly. And I agree with that, is that, you know, trying to talk with compassion, care, and empathy is more important now than ever.
And we need to solve our problems. Right now, we're not in a performance mode.
Yeah.
Right? We're just not. We're not getting the job done. Yeah. And I don't point it at politicians. I point it at ourselves, because we're not insisting they get the job done. How many years does it take to come up with a policy that we can all live with for immigration? We've been talking about it for 30 years.
Yeah.
Really? It really takes that much?
Yep.
You know?
Just got to figure out how to everybody come to the table and come up with the right answers.
Perfect, but we can sure, there are certainly good models around the world that we can emulate. Canada has a great model that we could all probably live with.
Yep. Well, I was actually just talking to, I met a professor in Columbus yesterday at lunch. And he was down, and he was saying that they're having issues with immigration, getting people from out of the country coming in, and it's affecting their student enrollment in the colleges.
Yeah.
Because of everything that's going on in the world, that their policies and things had to change and adjust.
Had to change. Yeah. It isn't. It doesn't work when you can't control your border. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know? And we can be empathetic, and we can do all the things we can do to help people. We can do.
You and I are both, you were born here. So you're first generation. I'm first born here. My mother came to the United States with my grandparents when she was 12 years old, 1966. You know, without them coming over here, we wouldn't have the lives that we have and the opportunities that we have, right? But they did it the right way. And my grandfather worked in a factory for 26 years, and he only called in sick one day, and it was to get his United States citizenship. And you know, there's definitely a work to be done, and I think there's still opportunity to let people have the opportunities, the great opportunities that we have. But it's definitely kind of a mess right now.
I'm for big immigration. If I were king of the world, but I don't want to close borders. I want to open borders, but I want to do it in a way that supports what we're trying to do, supports our country's goals. I mean, I'd like to bring a million East Indian engineers into this country. Right? Why not? I don't care what the color of their skin is. They're smart. They got engineering degrees, et cetera. You know?
I think you need to send some of your 5-year plans off to Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard Behar's 5-year plan for the White House. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Howard, do you get a chance to travel?
I do. I travel quite a bit. When I was working, I was traveling 70% of the time all over the world. So, but we do a lot. We did a trip Central Europe. We went to Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic, Croatia, Austria, and had a great time. And we did a Jewish roots trip on part of it. So we visited all the Jewish quarters in each of those places we went, Budapest. And then we went to, Holocaust kind of stuff. But most of the time we spent just talking to people, all the different kinds of people, and enjoying the countryside. We drove the whole way. The only time we got on an airplane was when we landed in Krakow and when we left out of Croatia. Other than that, we drove everywhere.
That is awesome.
Pretty cool.
And I love to travel. So my wife's in Spain right now with her son. Here's how, when you know you got it, it's right. My son, 2 years ago for Hanukkah, says to us, "Mom and Dad, I'd like to do something for you. I'd like to take each of you independently on a trip anywhere you want to go in the world. Anywhere you want to go in the world. First class, my treat." So I did mine last year, and we went to, I knew he loved tennis, so let's do something he loves to do. So I said, "I'd like to go to the French Open and like to go to Normandy." So we did that. We spent 10 days together. I mean, it was incredible. I just can't begin to tell you. My son's 55, and to have that kind of time and to be able to just talk about life. And my wife is doing hers right now, Spain and Portugal. And, you know, what, God, I mean, I just cannot tell you what that meant, that trip meant to me. I mean, I still cry about it today, that I'd have a son that would reach out and do that. It doesn't have to be that great at anything for your parents. Yep. Just to tell them you love them. To spend that kind of time. It was so great.
Well, that's awesome. We're coming close on time here, Mark. That's, Adam's over here giving me the hook. And
I know.
And my mother's actually in Spain and Portugal, so we could have talked about that. Like your wife could have met my mother this week, and we don't even know it. No, what are the chances of that? But Howard, we'd love to have you back on, because I think we just scraped the surface. So hopefully you'll give us another opportunity to have you on and continue the conversation, because you are just you're just awesome. And this has been a phenomenal hour with you, and learned a lot, and you've given some nuggets of knowledge and push people to have a BHAG that doesn't involve money, but involves people, which is huge. And I'm going to practice that with my companies moving forward. I'm working on those things as we speak. So thank you for the honor of giving us an hour of your time here, my friend.
Next time we'll talk about business.
Yeah. We didn't know what we were going to talk about today.
I had no idea.
Yeah. That's what makes this podcast great. So thank you very much, Mark. Thank you for, getting well enough to get on here with us. And that'll do it for an episode here. 5-star ratings and reviews. We love them. Helps grow our presence and our viewership. So please let us know how we're doing. Josh@beawesome.com. If you have any questions, concerns, criticisms, critiques, send them my way. And I'd love to hear from you. So in the meantime, you are awesome.
Come to you from underneath a peach blossom. It's time for an episode of Be Awesome. Find positivity throughout your life and work. Just like our mascot Rooster, Steve the Jerk.